Blog Talk Radio.
I'll do whatever I can.
Well, welcome everyone to another great episode of Relationship Marketing 101. I am your host, Gina Gaudio-Graves, the Dean and Founder of the IAMUniversity.com, coming to you live this week from Norcross, Georgia, and hoping that we have a guest today. I'm not seeing her here, so I'm hoping that I'm going to be able to get her on the phone with me. So everybody bear with me for just 1 second while I go see if I can get our guest on the air with us. Be back in just 1 second. Well, now that's not good. We have no guest, and my co-host Jennifer Carter has accepted a job that's going to be keeping her busy during the day, so she isn't going to be with us today either. So let's see. Maybe we can do this in a slightly different format today. What I wanted to be talking about was talking to Kim, who is Kim Duke from SalesDivas.com, about relationship marketing and the five biggest mistakes that women make in sales. Their stumbling blocks, actions they can take to really get started and whatnot. And Kim is just an expert in that area. So hopefully Kim gets my message and gets on the air. In the meantime, let's see if I can get somebody else to join me here. Bear with me for just 1 second, guys, while I see what we can do. Hey, here's Kim now. Be right back, everybody. Well, yay, we've got Kim Duke from SalesDivas.com. I am so happy that I found you somewhere.
Well, I'm so happy to be on the show today. Thanks so much for inviting me.
Well, I am so glad that you're here, too. So let me just give you a little introduction, because I only briefly told them who you were and what we were going to talk about. So let me do it properly.
You bet.
Kim Duke is the CEO and founder of the Sales Divas, www.salesdivas.com. She's an international expert who provides savvy, sassy sales training for entrepreneurs, but with a twist. I absolutely loved your little message that you really like sassy messages.
Yes, I do, honey.
That is awesome. Kim has an extensive sales background, then based in the media, basically. She's got 15 years of working with two of Canada's largest national television networks in sales and management. She's a national award-winning salesperson, and she was the second youngest sales manager in Canada for CBC Television, Canada's oldest network. But now, Kim is a successful entrepreneur. In fact, her message even says that she's out making money. I loved that. She's providing training for companies internationally. She recently was in Las Vegas and was one of the key conference speakers, including Jack Canfield of Chicken Soup for the Soul and The Secret. Kim's first love, though, is working with women entrepreneurs and women in sales. She just loves helping women succeed, and she doesn't want you to break a nail dialing for dollars either. She's an author, a speaker who's had numerous interviews for national television, radio, and print across North America. She's written hundreds of articles for newsletters and websites internationally, and thousands of women entrepreneurs from 54 countries around the world eagerly await her sales tips each week. She's bold, she's sassy, and she says it like it is. So thank you so much for joining us, Kim.
Well, thank you. It's an absolute pleasure, and the sun is shining here in Canada. I'm a happy girl.
Hey, that's pretty good. That's unusual, isn't it?
Well, you know, sometimes yes, but now that we're in the summer, it's all good. We don't live in igloos up here, contrary to popular belief.
Oh, too funny. Where in Canada are you?
I'm in Western Canada, in Alberta, which is very close to British Columbia. So have you ever been up to Canada?
I have, but only briefly, and it's certainly one of the places that I would love to travel through because it looks gorgeous from all the pictures I've seen.
You just definitely come on up, girl. It'll be all good. We'll have a martini up here.
Oh, we'll have to make plans to do that. My husband and I are full-time RVers, so we have wheels, we'll travel, you know?
I love it. I totally love it.
We just live in the RV and go from one place to the next, finding new people to meet every place we go.
Exactly. Don't you love that about life? I love it.
I certainly do.
It's totally into selling, doesn't it? It most certainly does.
And my husband's a salesperson by heart himself, so he's retired now. He just kind of takes me wherever I want to go.
Ooh, so what I was hoping, a well-trained man.
Absolutely. I trained him well. What I was hoping we'd talk about today are the five biggest mistakes that women make in sales, and I've been really anxious to hear about this from you. I would like to talk about the stumbling blocks, the action steps that they need to take now, the 10-touch marketing strategies. In other words, how to start making money fast in sales, both online and off. So let's just jump right in with both feet.
Okay, you got it. Well, and I like going back and forth, so you're cool with that?
I am.
Oh, yeah, you just interject with whatever. Well, first of all, for everyone who's listening on the call, thanks so much. Definitely one of the biggest problems that most women have in selling, and I want everybody to write this down, is that you think that selling has to be as painful as a Brazilian bikini wax, and it just does not have to be that way. So really, I think so many of us have learned that selling, where we thought it was supposed to be manipulative or pushy or really aggressive, and everyone take a sigh of relief, because selling is not about that at all. It's all about relationships. It's always about being an idea generator and a problem solver. And so that's really the foundation that I'm coming from. And also, I don't believe in cold calling. So a lot of you out there are thinking, oh, my God, I have to cold call to be successful in selling. And for those of you who may not be aware what that phrase means, it's, you know, you're dialing for dollars. You're picking up the phone. You're calling someone that you don't know and they don't know you. And you're hoping that they're going to buy from you. So that's what I want to move everyone away from today. All right, so one of the biggest, nastiest mistakes, and my gosh, there's so many of them, but definitely the biggest one in my books is that many women are trying to sell like the old boys club. And it's pretty bad. And so
That is pretty bad. I've seen that one as well.
Exactly. And in my world, and I'm sure for you as well, what that means is that you're trying to sell based on volume, making lots of phone calls, doing those, I'm going to call 25 people today, trying to sell someone on the very first time that you meet them, which is a massive mistake. People don't buy like that. And really feeling that you have to push or manipulate your client into buying from you. And again, those are all big mistakes. And so instead, really the world that you want to be coming from. And again, I was actually taught the old boys club way. When I first got, as you mentioned during my bio, I worked with two of the Canada's largest television networks in sales and management, and they were all men. There were hardly any women. And so it really quickly, initially I thought that I had to sell like they did. It just didn't work. And so truly my success in the media and being an entrepreneur beyond has all been about deviating from, again, what I believe is a Jurassic style of selling. It's old, it's outdated, it's dead, and it's a dinosaur. So instead, everyone, I want you to really focus on, and instead of spray and pray, which is what cold calling is, and selling like the old boys club, I want you to get focused. I want you to understand, who really are you the best fit for? Who really is the type of customer that you want to attract and not chase? I have a cute little story. I've got my little dog, Macy. She's a little black dog. About a couple years ago, we moved into a brand new housing development, and our garage wasn't built yet, and the fence wasn't built. But she, you know, you let her outside. She was old enough. She didn't take off or anything. And so all of a sudden, she's at the door, and then from next door, out comes this little dog. And honest to goodness, he is the ugliest little dog you've ever seen. He looks like he's gone through a garbage compactor. And his name is Durham. And he was maybe, I don't know, he was like a puppy. He was still really cute. He was only about a year and a half old. But he gave her that look and that little shake like, let's chase. And at first she ignored him, and then finally she's like, oh, okay, Macy's got really long legs. She's like me. So she's running ahead. He's chasing her. He's kind of like a little spring. He's chasing her. And I thought this was so hilarious until they ran through my neighbor's freshly poured garage pad, not once, but two times.
Oh, I know.
And at the time, I was laughing, and I thought, okay, it cost me like $1,000 to correct that little mistake. But I thought, you know what? I'm going to make money off of this because I am watching a customer salesperson's transaction where a salesperson is trying to chase a customer. And guess what happens when you chase something?
Same exact thing that happened there.
You got it. They run away. And so I want everyone to understand that in my sales diva world, chasing is just not an option because, you know, you waste a lot of time, you waste a lot of energy, it's very expensive, and we don't want you to be doing that. So I'll be giving you some ideas later on also what you can, some of the 10, what I call the 10-touch strategy on different things that you can be doing. Another nasty, oh, there's so many here too. There's another really bad mistake, and I think it's just because women really don't know what to do with it, is poor follow-up. And so what happens, and all of you have experienced this, you've been to a trade show, you've been networking, you've advertised, somehow you've attracted a customer to you, and it's awesome. And then you either sell them something, or let's say that they're really close to buying, but they're not quite there. And what happens? After that, most salespeople don't do anything. They do not follow up with the person that they sold to. They don't follow up with the person who is on the cusp. They completely let it just swirl down the drain. Actually, a few years ago, I went to a huge trade show, and I taught all the vendors what they needed to be doing at their booth in order to get the business. And one of the biggest mistakes, and this is a statistic that came out of the United States, was that almost 85% of people who go to a trade show in terms of trying to sell something at a booth at a trade show do not follow up with any of the leads that they get.
Oh, my goodness, that's terrible.
Isn't that awful? And you think about that for a second. You have to pay thousands for the booth. Then you have to hire staff to work it, or you have to work it yourself if you're a solopreneur. You've got to set up that nasty booth, which means usually borrowing a truck and getting people to help you load all this crap down to the event. You stand there in high heels for 2.5 days. You eat crappy trade show food. Then you have to unload all this stuff, haul it all back home, and then deal with 2 weeks' worth of back emails and everything else. And then you don't follow up with one single lead of that trade show. I know there's people on this call right now that are shaking their head with embarrassment. But I want to tell everybody, that's sucking the money right out of your bank account, because we can't do business like that. We can't wait for the customers to call us. That is not an option. Actually, I was telling a client of mine, because I do all sorts of coaching, and she was doing that. She not so much the trade show thing, but she was waiting and not doing any follow-up with her customers, not being proactive. And I said, you know, there's only one word for you when you do that, when you're not being proactive and when you're just waiting by the phone and hoping and praying that someone's going to call you. You're being an order taker. And an order taker, there's nothing relationship-based about that. Yeah, that's you completely waiting for someone to remember that you even exist and to remember that they should buy from you. So for all of you who are listening on this call, who are currently, you know in your heart that you're being an order taker, consider that you just got a stiletto in the butt all the way from Canada because you need to become proactive. People who are professional salespeople and exceptional business owners, we are people who definitely believe in follow-up. We definitely believe that if you want to have a relationship with a customer, and especially a long-term relationship, because none of us want just to have a short-term one, you must have a follow-up strategy in place that you are doing on a consistent basis. So is that a lot of hot air for you, or what do you think about that?
I think that is a really good way to do it. So what kind of follow-up do you recommend? Is this phone kind of follow-up? They got to start calling people. They got to start doing what?
Well, I'd like everybody to get a piece of paper in front of you. Get a little piece of paper and draw a big circle. And then I want you to draw almost like a hole in the donut right in the middle. So in that smaller hole in the middle, I want you to write the word you. And then I want you to draw 10 spokes. So let's make it look like I'm drawing here as I'm talking to you. You want to make it look like a bicycle wheel, right, with spokes. So put 10 spokes all the way around. Doot, doot, doot. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Okay. So here's how it works, everyone. In terms of, I come from the world of advertising. That's where I spent 15 years. In the world of advertising, we have a phrase, and it's very important for you as well. It's called top of mind awareness. And what that means is that if, what's your favorite chocolate bar? It's Gina, right?
It is Gina. And
Gina,
my favorite chocolate bar would be Hershey's with almonds.
Oh, you're a good woman. I love a Mars bar. And so do you see how quickly we just went, no problem to name our favorite chocolate bar, or maybe a bag
Absolutely.
Of chips, or where are we, as if I was going to buy a hammer. But if I asked a guy, hey, if you had to buy a hammer, where would you go? They would just say, whatever, might be Home Depot or might be something else. But it's just right there. They're instantly thinking about it. That is what all of you, everyone in sales, whether you work for someone else or whether you're selling on your own for your own company, that is always the focus, is for you to be have top-of-mind awareness with your customers, but also with your potential customers. And that's where what I lovingly call the 10-touch strategy comes into place. But I just want, before we dive into that, I just want to put a little thing in here. A touch is where you are, it's almost like a little touch on the shoulder. You're just like, hey, here I am, and here's what I've got for you, and here's how I can help you. So, again, most often, most salespeople, when we know that on average it takes up to 9 touches before someone will buy from you, because, again, it's based on relationship selling. But here we go. Most people, most salespeople and business owners quit after 1. And then they're going, well, that advertising didn't work. They're going, why, that trade show didn't work. That ad didn't work, blah, 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 or that networking doesn't work for me. Well, hello. You have to be in front of your customer developing a relationship a minimum of 9 times. Years ago, I had a client, a potential client, it took me a year to get that account because it was so big. So it took many, many touches, not just, 1 to 5 or even 9. It was way more than that. And so I want everybody to, I'm giving you a little snap out of it, as my mom would say, and that you have to be in front of your customers and potential customers at least every 4 weeks. And now it's not that you're turning into a stalker either, so I don't want you to think, oh, my God, how am I going to do this? Well, let's just talk about that for a second. So there's the basic ones. There's the phone. Let's start with the phone. You should be connecting. Don't be hiding behind your computer all the time, everybody. I want you to get out from your computer and actually get on the phone and talk to your top 10 to 20% of your customers. Ask them out for a greasy breakfast. Oh, by the way, that works like a hot damn. I never work Fridays, and the reason why is because I always go for breakfast with somebody, either a potential customer or an existing customer that I have that I just want to spend some time with and do a little brainstorming for them. I don't charge them anything for that. It's just a way for me to get into their head. So greasy breakfast all the way is a good idea.
That's a very good idea. And on the Internet, you have so many of the big quote-unquote gurus tell you, well, you've got to have an autoresponder series to follow up with your customers and your prospects, and you should have 5 to 7 emails in it. And it's just not enough. I love the idea of having the 10 touches because it takes at least that, and in some cases more than that.
Absolutely. And there's also the personal, and that's why I said the 10 to 20% of your top customers. You may be someone that just has 100 customers or 20 customers. You may be somebody who has thousands. But there are going to be the key influencers, the key people who are driving the bus. And it doesn't matter. I have customers from all over the world. But my top ones, every now and then, are going to get even a random phone call from me. Or if they live, just dropped my book here. Or if they live close by, there's someone that I can go take them out for breakfast. So get on the phone. Make sure that you're connecting at least 3 times a week on the phone with customers that you have in your world. They're basically your unpaid sales force. They're out there really promoting you. They're referring you. You want to stay in their world and find out what some of their challenges and how you can help them. The next one, of course, is email, which, you got to love technology. Email is a fantastic way of keeping in touch with people, but you can't make this mistake. And that's where you hide behind email all the time. And the second one is where you're following up with this particular line. And you can even say this on the phone. You're saying this on the phone or through email. Hi, John. I'm just touching base to see if you had a chance to read that proposal or if you've made up your mind yet, blah, blah, blah. Don't do that, people.
Right.
It is bad news. Don't do that. Don't say, hi, I'm just touching base. And it's where it's all about you. Always remember this filter for follow-up, that you must always be bringing new value to the table every time you contact that person. Are we clear? So you must always have something new or a new resource or a website or you have an idea, that you always use that as a filter. Otherwise, you're just like all the other salespeople out there and you're just touching base to see if they've made a decision yet. Don't do that. Instead, say, oh, I've discovered something for you. I'd like to run this idea past you, or, oh my God, you need to have a look at this website. I think this would be great for your upcoming promotion. It positions you, it takes you out of that whole salesy world and moves you into the world of being an expert and a resource for your customers. And by the way, we all love that. So use email properly by bringing added value and tips and helpful things to your customers instead of it being a big we-itis disease fest, where it's all about you, we, I, and you're just smothering your customer with basically information that they don't care or want to know about. Next one is definitely, and for those of you who aren't doing this, you get a little slap on the wrist today, it's called an electronic newsletter, which is an e-zine. And a lot of people, and blogs are a totally separate issue, we'll be talking about that here. But you really must have a way of communicating with all of your database on a regular basis, at least once per month. I connect with all of my subscribers every single week. So they get an article from me. It comes in the form of electronic e-zine. And it, honest to goodness, everyone, it's one of the most cost-effective sales tools that you can use. It costs you pennies to do this. And what you're doing is you're out in front of your customers, giving them valuable tips, information, and resources on a consistent basis using the 75% content rule, 25% promotion. Do you see how it wasn't 75%, hi, we've got a sale? And instead, it's really only supposed to be layered, 25%. Because otherwise, people think that you're all you're in there for is to pitch your latest product or, hi, we've moved to a new location and all that stuff. That information is fine, but it's really not what you want to be hammering at them all the time. What you really want to be doing is positioning yourself as someone who is a resource or an expert. So that's definitely a big touch that I want you to be making. Also, blog. Do you have a blog, Gina?
I do.
Good woman. So, yes, a blog is important, and, of course, it's free to set up. So you can go through WordPress or TypePad. You don't have to do the whole setup yourself. You can hire someone to do it, make it fancy for you. But again, it's just another way to attract attention onto Google and to express yourself a little bit with just an article or your thoughts of the day or something that's relevant to your customers. And so that is a really important tool. Social media.
I even have a couple of courses on blogging, and when people get my courses, they get access to my blog installers at tremendous discounts. Usually their whole blog, custom headers, everything is like $50 to $100.
Isn't that wonderful? And people, like, of course, they love that. They're going, okay, how can we, so you need to check out Gina's product there. It sounds fabulous. And so do you see how what we're doing is we're surrounding our customers, we're circling the wagon by offering a variety of different ways for someone to see and hear about us. Social media is another one, and that's, you know, we're not going to get into that too deep, but everything from Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, all of this, these are free tools, everybody. This stuff didn't even exist 10 years ago, and so not even like 5 years ago. And so you must tap into the stuff that is relevant to you and that is going to, again, remember, it's all about attracting customers to you that are the same fit as you. Another huge thing that I find that most people are not doing is they're not making any attempt to get into the media. So, which, again, it costs nothing. There's a great website that I love, and her tips are fabulous. Her name is Joan Stewart, and her website is called Publicity Hound, as in the dog, publicityhound.com. So make sure you sign up for her stuff, because Joan is just a guru in the publicity world, and she has a great e-zine, lots of really inexpensive reports that talk to you about how to attract media attention to you and your business, and also what you sell, and also how you're helping people out there. For example, I just got back from Dallas a couple days ago. I was there for a week doing my high-speed sales stiletto camp, way more fun than boot camp, and we actually made it on to NBC television because we sent a one-page news release to a reporter in Dallas and talked about the hook of who cares about there being a recession, that women entrepreneurs are still getting together and still learning and that was the hook. And so they came and did a 90-second shoot of us, which, you know, they shot for about 2 hours, but they edited down to 90 seconds, and it ran during prime time, the 6 o'clock news in Dallas, Texas. Well, that's worth about $20,000, and I paid nothing for it.
Wow.
I know. And so I want people to understand, getting into it, because, of course, I worked in the media for such a long time, ignoring the media, not realizing that by just focusing on what's hot out there in the news, what's happening in the news, can get you attention, and it costs nothing. For another example, a friend of mine, she's also a speaker, but you don't have to be a speaker to get into the news. She's a woman. Do you remember the show Ally McBeal?
I do.
Okay, and she wore those itsy bitsy little skirts?
Yep.
Yeah. So in Canada here, in another province called Ontario, there was a lawyer. This is like several years ago, a lawyer that went to court, and she's a female lawyer that went to court, and she was wearing a short little kind of mini skirt as part of her suit. Well, the judge kicked her out of the courtroom and told her that she had to come back properly dressed. Now, you can imagine that caused a bit of a kerfuffle across the country. The media was all over it. And my friend, who is an image consultant, she saw this in the newspaper, and she's like, so she faxed off to the reporter that had written that particular article. She faxed off some information about her and also what she would recommend to businesswomen for them to be wearing and why this happened, and gave a bunch of tips to the reporter. 24 hours later, that article ran in the Canada's largest newspaper. It ran coast to coast, and she had a full page article in every single major market across the country, and all it cost her was the fax.
Wow.
So, I know. And so, all of you out there, if you're not getting regular media, and when I say regular, you should be on there at least, you should be getting some kind of media hit at least once every quarter. So once every 3 months, you should be getting something. I get it more often, but that's because I have a regular media strategy where the news releases are going out on a regular basis. It costs nothing, so make sure that you're checking out Publicity Hound and really investigating that. Now, something else.
Before you go on, let me just give you one more example, because that works for online businesses, offline businesses.
Yeah.
It really doesn't matter. My cousins opened a restaurant in Naples, Florida, back in December.
Right.
And the restaurant is a restaurant with a little bit of a twist. It's a pet-friendly restaurant. So at the end of January, they were getting ready to try and find ways that they could get publicity, and I said, why don't we try and use joint ventures to help you get publicity? So back then was when the movie Hotel for Dogs was just coming out. So I had them set up a joint venture with a local movie theater. The movie theater gave them tickets that they could give away to anyone who bought a certain amount of food, and they would get a free ticket to go to the movies to see Hotel for Dogs. The movie theater then gave coupons away to get people from the theater back to the restaurant for a meal. We sent one press release to one radio station. It got picked up not just by that radio station, by all the local newspapers, by the radio station and two others, and both the theater and the restaurant were packed for like 3 weeks because of it. It was easy, really easy to do.
Well, it's almost like what happened with Sex and the City. I believe that so many businesses screwed up, and the movie theaters screwed up, because they didn't charge enough money. Here they are charging $15 for a ticket or whatever it is. But they could have given away, they could have had theme parties and had people dressed up like the characters in Sex and the City and given away free pairs of Milano Blahniks. But, you know, people get lazy and they forget that it's about tag-teaming onto that. I did a news release. Also, remember, everybody, that news releases work two ways. You can use them with your local media or national media or whatever you want, but also make sure that you're using PRWeb.com. Because what that does, when you post your news release with PRWeb, it drives a lot of traffic to your business. I think I had something like 75,000 hits on a news release that I did that I tag-teamed on what was happening with the Sex and the City movie. And I said, what is the big lesson women entrepreneurs can learn from Sex and the City? And so those are all keywords that were flying around like crazy when that movie came out. And of course, it also drew traffic to my website. So there's lots of sneaky little ways and things that you can do to attract business and attract people to you. But yeah, you're going to have to hire a virtual assistant. You're going to maybe have to give yourself a little sweat equity. But it is possible. It totally is possible to do this. Something else that's really that is so important, and I mentioned this a little while ago, was meeting people in person. I think that is something that people are forgetting. So make sure that you are actually getting out there in networking. Networking is definitely part of the 10-touch strategy. You want to be in front of potential new customers. But just don't be choosing networking groups like just sort of random. That's a complete waste of time and money. Instead, everyone, I want, no matter what industry that you're in, I want you to understand who your target audience is. And then I want you to find an association that ties into that. For an example, here in Canada, we have the Hotel and Restaurant Association. And so you don't have to own a hotel or a restaurant to go to those luncheons. You can join as a supplier. And so now all of a sudden, you are going to a luncheon, sitting at a table with all of your target audience. And by the way, people that go to those types of meetings tend to be the decision makers, the owners of these types of places. And now that you're in the club and you're sitting out there, and again, normally it hardly costs anything, a couple hundred bucks.
Did we lose Kim? Kim? Kim, are you there? Oh, no, everybody, let me see if I can get Kim back. Kim, are you there? Okay, let me go get her back on the phone. I will be right back, everybody. You sure did.
Halfway through, I was like, what happened?
I don't know, but we couldn't hear you, and then all of a sudden you were gone. So
I was gone. Okay, so back to
associations. At least you got
to back. So back to associations. What happens with associations is that, for me, it's women entrepreneurs and women who sell. And so I join associations, for example, like eWomen Network. It's one of the largest organized networking associations for women in the world. and it's based out of Dallas, Texas, but they have chapters through almost every major city in the United States and Canada. And so it's a perfect target audience for me. And so I make sure that that's part of where I don't spend any advertising dollars at all. Where I put that money instead is for memberships to different types of associations. So for all of you who are out there networking, and my goodness, you definitely should be networking. You got to get your face out there. That is the filter that I want you to use. Who is the best fit for you, and where are your customers hanging out? Something else, and actually this gets me, and this is another one of the 10 touches, what gets me a lot of attention is articles. And so, for example, I'm writing in my blog all the time, writing in my e-zine, and I have a virtual assistant who just pulls out that article, so I don't have anything to do with it because I believe in squeezing at least 5 uses out of every single thing that I do. And for the articles, what you do is she just takes out that article out of my e-zine and then posts it to all sorts of different sites, article sites around the world. And you can do that as well. A great one is ezinearticles.com. It's one of the largest article resources in the world. It's free. It doesn't cost you anything to go there. And then other people who have articles or e-zines, they can actually go in and scoop your article. You get the full credit for it, of course, and it drives them back to your website. It's an incredibly powerful tool. And it also, over a few months' period of time of doing this, drives you up in Google. And so in certain keywords and things like that, once again, because people are not going to the phone book anymore, they're searching out keywords on Google, it's a great thing. It's hilarious. I ended up getting working with the WNBA and the NBA because of that.
Wow.
It was funny. When they first contacted me, I thought it was a spam. I thought this email came in. I thought, oh, come on. It's not the NBA. What the heck's going on? So I thought, before I delete this, I guess I should contact them. And I actually said to the lady, I'm like, okay, is this spam? Is this for real? Are you guys the WNBA? And she started laughing because she goes, Kim, yes, it's real. We're calling you from New York. So it was quite funny, and I ended up doing a ton of stuff with them just because, and I said, how did you find out about me? Which, by the way, all of you should be asking that question for every customer. And she said, well, girl, you are all over the internet, and we read all of your articles, we've listened to your podcasts, and we really cruised through your website because we saw that you had a lot of resources there. So do you see, everyone, how people are what I lovingly call, they're hors d'oeuvring you? It's just
yes.
Like they're hors d'oeuvring you before they even contact you. And so that is another sort of a sub-purpose that happens with the 10 touches, and I have this one in my books all about hors d'oeuvring, is that this all of these things act as a really gentle way for people to find out more about you. Because remember, we all tend to buy from those who we like, trust, and respect. And it's a great way for your potential customer to see if you're bringing value to the table. So that's a fabulous one. But by the way, doesn't matter if you don't want customers from around the world, even if you want them within your own region, by posting articles and having them on your website, posting them on the internet, guess what happens when they do a search for you or when they check you out on Google? They see tons of name mentions, and guess what that does to your credibility? It rises. They feel that you're all that. And so we all want to buy from people who have positioned themselves as an expert and as a resource. The last two that I want to talk to you about, the first one, and I think a lot of people aren't doing this, is direct mail. Because we tend to get so hung up on technology, understand, remember, it's about circle the wagons versus just trying one way to reach your customers. Something that I love using that has been very successful for me is postcards. And so even Vistaprint, you can go to Vistaprint and you can get cards for free, or you can get cards really inexpensively. And use humor, everyone. Make sure that you use humor or cool quotes on the front. You can go to famousquotes.com. There's lots of quote sites out there. But use humor and emotion and really cool, interesting pictures to draw attention to that card. Remember, you want it to make it fridge-worthy, where people are willing to stick it on the fridge because it's so cool and interesting. And that is a great way for you to send tips to a ton of potential customers, and, again, really cost-effectively. Now, the last one I want to mention here, the 10 touch, and by the way, these are all things that I and my company is doing every single month. Now, do I do it all myself? No. I have a virtual assistant, but I want you to know that this is really the approach that you need to be taking to be successful in sales. And the last one, and I love doing this one, it's called seeding. Just like when you're planting seeds for a garden, it's called seeding. And it's utilizing the postal service of whatever country that you are in. And what you do, this is only for your top 10 to 20% of your customers, because, again, you're actually sending something in the mail to them that is handwritten. So, Gina, when you get something in the mail and you see handwriting, what do you do?
Well, I got to open that for sure.
Yeah, and it's the first one we open.
Absolutely.
It's not like we jump for the bills. We go, oh, here's my credit card bill, and oh, here, we don't go for that. We end up just diving in and going for the handwriting, because it's almost like a stream of light from the sky. It's like, oh, there's the handwriting. And what seeding is, it's always what I call, it's also like fun mail. So you're sending thank you cards. You're sending cool thank you cards, not cheesy ones from Safeway with the gold swirly thank you on the front. You're not doing any of that. You're sending articles that maybe you know that one of your clients loves cats. You're going to send them a little article that you found in the newspaper about cats. You're going to just really tap into the personal side of things. And what I want everybody to do is you'll use a sticky note that you're going to staple right to that piece of information. And you'll say, hey, John, or hey, Jane, or whatever, saw this, thought of you. And then sign your name and make sure that they know that it's you that it's coming from. But do not be tempted to stick in your business card, jam in a bunch of information about your sale or whatever else is coming up, because then you've wrecked it. Now it's become direct mail. And remember, there's two different purposes. Direct mail is where you're offering tips and you may be doing a promotion or a sale. That's fine. Seeding is all about them. Not about you. And we want it to be fun for them. And so it should have handwriting on the outside of the envelope versus a label. It should be personal. And by the way, I have sold so many hundreds of thousands of dollars by doing seeding. On average, I send out 25 a week. Everything from... And, you know, it's just something that you do in front of the TV, right? When you're just sitting there and you're like, you got some cool cards for customers, or maybe you found an article that a lot of your customers would be interested in, you can just photocopy it and just put a little signature note on it, pop it in the mail. Well, guess what? They love you, and now you're in front of your customer and potential customers, even though you're not physically standing in front of them. So there's the 10 touches.
Gotcha. Man,
yeah.
That was great. And what's cool about it is it is truly the epitome of relationship marketing.
It really is.
Every single one of those touches is furthering the relationship a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. And that's what it's all about.
It really is.
It's not going out and just getting in your face and doing a hard sell. It's letting the relationship bring the sale to you.
And that also, I think, is when we talk about some of the big mistakes, and I referred to this a little earlier, is that sometimes women are expecting, or men as well, they're expecting the deal to close super quick. Like, hi, I met you. Want to buy from me? And
yeah.
I was at a networking association here about a month ago. Oh, have you ever watched, as a kid, did you ever watch Jacques Cousteau or National Geographic, you know, when they have shows about sharks and stuff?
I have.
Okay, so... For example, when they show on these shark shows, when they show the chum over the side of the boat, you know, all the blood and guts of the fish and stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then the sharks come in, and they call it frenzying, where the sharks frenzy. And they're going after the food, and their eyelids roll back. Their eyelids roll back, and they put this other eyelid that comes up. Like, it's just insane. That is what many people look like at a networking meeting. So you walk up.
It's so true.
They're all over you. I had this woman come up to me, and I shook my hand, said, I'm Kim Duke, and then she's like, oh, do you use my product? I'm with this company. Do you use this product? I said, no, I don't. Well, why don't you use this product? This is a really good product. You know, she's all over me. Like, and I thought, get away from me. Because that, of course, she was in full-scale chase mode.
Yeah.
And when you do that, all you're doing is ticking people off. And, of course, the emotion, because selling is all about emotion, creating emotion. It's not positive. So my lingering memory of her is like a shark with her eyelids rolled back, gumming the water. And so
I
don't want anyone who's in selling right now to feel like that. And also, you know, so much of this is just like the 10 touches. If you, when you really sit down with this, there, most of them are very basic, very simple, but you know what? It's just like anything else. It's not going to work unless you put a plan and a strategy in place and make them work. And I think one other major problem with many, many entrepreneurs is that they're trying to do everything by themselves. And that's a mistake, because you're really, what happens then is that you're spending far too much time working in the business versus working on it. And that will definitely stunt your growth.
Oh, for sure. For
yeah.
sure.
It's really brutal. So some of the other, in terms of action steps and things that I want people to do right away, I want you to take a look at all of the things that I just mentioned from the 10-touch strategy, and don't overwhelm yourself. Instead, go, okay, I am going to choose two of these things, and I'm going to apply two per week. So over a five-week period of time, you would have slowly ramped up and you would have worked your way through the 10-touch strategy. And once you get started, you'll really discover it feels so good, and you're not spending and spinning your wheels and wasting a lot of money on advertising. You're being incredibly proactive. So I do want you to do that. And again, when we were talking about some of the big mistakes that women entrepreneurs are making, or any entrepreneur actually, you really have to understand that if you are not, if you're looking at your competition more than you're looking at your own business, you really are headed for trouble. I was just down in Dallas again, and we were talking, and there was a couple of women, they were really focusing on what their competition was doing. They were going, well, they're doing this, and they're doing that, and their website's this, and they're doing that, and their pricing is this, and should I drop my prices? And I could tell they were incredibly overwhelmed with it all. And I said, okay, wait a second. First of all, you have to understand who really is your competition. Because your true competition, it also starts with a C, but it's the word complacency. Your biggest competition, and this is for everyone, for all of us, is when your customer decides to stick with the status quo. And so they don't buy the new cream. They don't hire a new website guy. They don't do anything. They just stick with what they've always been done. There is far more money that is left on the table around the world every single day because customers, they feel that you're too risky. And so they decide to stay with their existing supplier even though they can't stand them. They stay with the car that's driving them nuts, or whatever else, because they just say, well, you know what, I'm not feeling the love yet, so let's just stick with what we've got. Have you ever done that, Gina?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's
human nature to do that, isn't it?
It is, it really is, isn't it, when we just decide, okay, look, I'm not, and even, it's like that book, the tipping point. In relationships, there's that tipping point where all of a sudden you're like, yeah, I'm totally going to go for it, I'll take the leap. People don't make leaps of faith unless they feel that there's going to be value there, and you're the same way. So all of you within your businesses, I want you to understand, you cannot be coming from a place of desperation. You cannot be panicking in front of a client about where your next mortgage payment is going to be coming from. You can't be doing those things, because what it causes is that nasty perfume called eau de desperation. It stinks. And
that's a good way to say it.
And customers, they can't handle it. They just know on some gut level that you don't have the money, or that you're not being as successful as you say that you are. And so what happens is they don't buy from you. So that is something that I really, really, really want everybody to move away from. Move away from desperation, create a long-term strategy, and of course, just you got to get out of that rat cage, little guinea pig cage, where you're spending a lot of energy and time and money, but you're not moving anywhere.
Well, and so many people that I deal with are people who are building businesses that primarily use the internet.
Yes.
And they forget that it really is a business, no different than a business being built offline. And so all these concepts that you've been talking about today, they just look at as not applying to them in their business, because it's an online business instead of an offline business.
Yeah,
and
they're crazy.
And that is such a huge mistake. because everything you do, the internet is great to do with.
Mm-hmm.
But the internet is simply a tool for building a business. Not one that's online, not one that's offline. Simply a tool for building a business.
Precisely.
Online or offline, you need to use it. So if you really look at it as a business first, as opposed to being an internet-based business,
mm-hmm.
then all of these concepts of how you're making sales and whatnot start making a little bit more sense. You start really looking at your traffic, your visitors to your website, as being leads as opposed to being buyers. Because they're not buyers yet. They're just leads, no different than an offline business who sends salespeople out to go create leads.
Precisely. And I think, and also where once they do have a customer, because again, I believe the 10-touch strategy is a combination of online, offline.
I agree.
Because everybody, I want everybody to, like, you got to get a grip here, because don't make the mistake that a lot of businesses are out there making where they relied 100% on traditional forms of marketing or advertising, mainly media. And now, of course, that's blown up. You don't want to have all of your eggs in one basket. Let's just put it out there for a second. I'm just going to be the devil's advocate. What would happen if one day email is not free and all of a sudden email costs a fortune? If you've based your entire business on just sending email, or just, you're cooked.
Absolutely.
So you never, as a business owner and as a salesperson, you never want to put yourself at risk that way. And also remember that even when I have an online business as well, but when people, you have to understand that that person that's giving you that credit card number, they took it out of their wallet, which was in their purse, which they had in their office, where the dog was sitting beside, and then they went downstairs and had a piece of pizza. They're people. They're real people. They're not just a number coming through. And so if you can ramp it up a little bit and start treating those people as people, that, of course, strengthens your long-term relationship. And that's really where viral marketing comes from. But then, my gosh, that's a whole other call, isn't it?
It certainly is. Boy, is it ever. But it's one that I really get into because so many people that I deal with just never think about it at all.
No, they get really stuck. And where have you find that some of your internet-based marketers, where have they been flopping around a little bit and having some trouble?
I think one of the biggies is they don't spend enough time thinking about who their audience really is.
Yeah,
and so they'll put up this website, and they'll do this website on, say, wedding dresses, so their audience mm-hmm. should be brides. And then they'll go put up this website on dog grooming, and their audience is dog owners.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll go put up this site over here on houses in foreclosure because they heard that was supposed to be a good thing. And they look at the keywords to figure out where traffic potentially can come from, but they don't think about the relationship side of it and who they're building relationships with. And they end up with three separate distinct sets of relationships. And it just stays small constantly if they get results at all.
Exactly. In the advertising world or the sales world, we have a name for that. It's called spray and pray.
Yes, that's a very good name for it.
Because what's there, like you just mentioned, there's not any focus. So it's almost like somebody is taking a pellet gun that has all these little pellets inside of it, and they're just spraying them around, hoping that it's going to hit somebody.
Yeah.
But that, and I think that's why so many entrepreneurs and salespeople get discouraged, and why they also quit and they give up is because, of course, you're not going to see results from that strategy. Because it's not
no,
a strategy.
You really won't.
You're going to really struggle. You're going to wonder, why am I spending all this money and time? Why am I not getting the traffic and the people that I want? But remember, traffic is just a fancy word for people.
It is.
Like, I want everybody to remember. I'm going to write an article about that. But it is. It's just a fancy word thought up by an internet geek somewhere down the line. And what it is people. People. Real people who, again, if you're not making them feel the trust, if they just feel like they're being sold another whatever, because you remember we have a sophisticated audience. We have very sophisticated customers. And the one and all businesses who will be, honestly, the most successful online and off are the ones who have the strongest relationships with their customers.
Well, you certainly wouldn't consider in the offline world setting up a wedding dress store in one place and setting up a dog grooming business in another place and having all these businesses with really high overheads, with all these costs involved that don't have an audience that can build more revenues for that business. You sure wouldn't do it offline.
Nope.
So why should you do it online?
Exactly. I think it's because people think, oh, well, it doesn't cost me much to do that. Well, you sit down and you figure out what it has actually cost you in terms of time, opportunity costs, all those other things that go into it. And I really come from the world of where you create wealth is in niche audiences. In Canada, we say niche. So it comes from creating a focused group, a focused customer that, again, all these techniques that I've been talking to you about, that you can surround them in a variety of ways, that's how you build a name for yourself. You don't want to be like Vanilla Ice and be just like the one-hit wonder. They buy from you once, and that's the end of it. You never hear from them again, or they never refer you. And there's another big problem, is where so many women entrepreneurs and women who sell, they forget that what you're really wanting in selling is the customer lifeline. You don't want them just to buy from you once and that's it. That costs you way too much money. You want people who will buy from you repeatedly, or that they're going to send referrals to you over a period of years. And so you start thinking about that. Attracting that one customer who buys from you, who believes in you, they continue to buy from you over the years, and then, by gosh, they're telling every single person that they know to buy from you as well. What could that end up worth to you? That one customer may be $50,000 to you over a period of 10 years. You need to figure it out. You need to track it.
Absolutely. And tracking is another big deal.
Well, and I think that, and again, that's something else in terms of follow-up and all these things. People, they're just not doing it because they perceive it to be a pain in the butt. And they're also, and here's another big one, you're not doing revenue projections. You're not planning out how much money you plan on making that you want to make every single month. Are you hitting your revenue objectives? Are you hitting your targets? And doing really analysis. It's like you have to stick your toe in the swimming pool of your own life and find out what's going on and what's happening within your business. Otherwise, before long, things really run away from you. Because, by the way, everybody, this recession, this doesn't just fall out of the sky like Chicken Little. This is the signs have been coming for at least 3 years. And the problem is that most people ignored it and just thought, oh, well, it'll get better. Things will turn around. Well, and there's some industries that have really suffered because they had that head in sand approach. And I don't want anybody to take that approach at all, because whether it's good times or bad, you can position yourself as an expert, as a resource with a fabulous product or service, and you can make money. You can make lots of money. So that's my wish for every one of your listeners.
Absolutely. And the neat thing about it is, if you set your business up in the right way and you really plan it out strategically, I mean, that's what I teach. So you start with, how much money do you want to make? What are your long-term goals? And you work your way backwards.
Yes.
The recession won't bother you at all. You probably won't even feel it, because it's during those recessionary times that if you're really helping people, if you're really serving an audience in some way, shape, or form, they're going to need even more help in the recessionary times, because they've got so much more on their plate when the economy is kind of not doing so good.
That's a very good point.
If you plan it strategically, you can plan to make even more money in a recessionary time.
Absolutely. And then, of course, and just as you said, you're planting all those seeds. You're really, there's a lot of people, there's a lot of competitors that are going to drop off the planet here in the next little while. Tough times like this do serve a purpose. They clean out people who really weren't acting as business owners. They were acting like they had an expensive hobby.
Absolutely.
And so all of you have to make a choice. Are you in an expensive hobby or are you in business? Because someone who's in an expensive hobby, when times get tough, they quit investing in themselves. They quit. They're not taking training. They're not out there. They're falling off. They're so focused on withdrawing expenses, which, by of course, that's important. But they're not realizing that at this time you also have to invest in yourself to get your sales going. You have to invest money to attract money. And so, please, everybody, don't make that mistake where you just quit marketing and quit promoting yourself, and then you think, oh, my God, what's happening? That would be completely the wrong approach to take.
Well, my good friend Ben Mack did a study recently, and he asked the question of, okay, if we look back historically at other economically depressed times, was there any kind of a trend that emerged clearly that could have been the cause for the economy coming back?
Mm-hmm.
And what he learned when he did that was that back in the 30s with the Great Depression, we saw the emergence of group coaching. Group coaching wasn't a big deal prior to the Depression. And it was smack dab in the middle of the Depression that group coaching became popular.
Hmm.
And at each point in history since that time, where the economy has had some sort of a slowdown, group coaching saw a major surge. And by the 70s, the group coaching concept started changing a little bit and became kind of a cross between a group coaching and a mastermind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that at each point, right before the economy started turning around, coaching and or masterminding became a big deal. And he seems to think that that could have been a big cause for the turnaround. And I tend to agree with him.
Oh, I think so. And also it provides, because really, aren't many brains better than just one?
Mm-hmm.
And working on the problem solving of your business and being in some sort of a mentorship program, I think that is also a huge foundation of how to be successful in sales. You can't be so insulated. You can't be in your own little silo. What did Albert Einstein say? He said that you cannot solve a problem with the same conditions that created it.
That's very true.
And so many people have, they're like, okay, well, I'm in this mess, or I'm losing business, or things are not, I'm not getting as many customers as I'm used to getting. And so what they're doing, of course, is they're getting frustrated, and they keep using the same tactics, but those tactics were the ones that got them in trouble in the first place. And
right.
So as you said, you know, group coaching or any type of coaching and seminars and things like that, they help you change your perspective on everything. And of course, in selling and relationships, everything is about perspective.
And one of the biggest things that they do for you is you don't know what you don't know. And
yes.
If you don't know it, you're not even going to ask the right questions to get the right answers because
mm-hmm.
you truly don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes some sort of coaching or mentoring to bring those issues to your forefront in the first place.
That's
and
right.
This is a biggie to remember both for yourself and for your customers. Because your customers don't know what they don't know either.
Precisely.
And I see this all the time. People will go out and say, oh, wow, Gina talked about this relationship marketing stuff. And she told me I got to go out and help people and serve people. So they know what their customer needs. And they go out and try and give their customer what they need. But the customer only knows what they want. They don't know that they need what you've got in the first place.
Exactly. You're
because
like an inventor.
They don't know what they don't know. Exactly.
But you're really, we're all like inventors, aren't we? Coming up with something unusual. You know, that's such a good point that you said, because we're talking here about people don't know what they don't know, and so they get stuck in these bad habits and obviously not able to move forward with whatever problem that they have. A big one that happens that I see happening with women in sales is, for example, here we're in the summer right now, or just about to enter the summer season, and a lot of people go, oh, summer is slow. Summer is a slow time of year. Or they'll say, another time I hear this a lot is at Christmas time, around December.
Oh, I see this too.
Right, December and January, like, oh, well, no, sales are dropped off, because people, unless you're in retail or you're selling products for Christmas, like, oh, it's slow, it's slow. And I have one thing to say to you, you're missing out big time. Because when your sales are slow, everyone, and I'm a former sales manager here, I'm giving you a little prod, is that what happens is it just reflects your poor planning.
Sure does.
You know it. Because what happened is that 90 days ago, for whatever reason, you fell off the planet and you weren't promoting yourself, you weren't following up with customers, you weren't doing revenue projections on a weekly basis, so you weren't tracking how your sales were coming in, whether it's on through the internet or offline or whatever. Money's money. Your banker doesn't care how it comes to you. And so you need to understand on a weekly basis where you're sitting at. And I see so many women that they're going, oh, my God, things have dropped off. Well, you need to give your head a shake. Remember that you really – I had such a great boss years ago when I first got into selling – and he's from San Francisco, and he had crazy hair, and he smoked a ton of cigarettes. He was quite the character. But he gave me the best advice. And when I was first going to selling, and he said, hey, kid, you want to have 75% of your sales when you're walking into the quarter, you want 75% of your sales already closed or that you know where that money is coming from. And as a kid, I was so naive, I didn't know any better. And so, you know, you just do it and you make it happen. Because there's a lot of you right now, you're so focused, you're always selling in the month, for the month, you really don't have any idea where you're going to be getting money from next month until you get there. And now you're panicking about, oh my God, not enough people are buying today or next week or whatever. Remember, you need to be shooting for and planning and planting those seeds at least 90 days ahead of time. So here we are in June, when we think July, August, September. Technically and realistically, you should be thinking about what are you going to be doing? What types of promotions? What types of marketing techniques? What are you going to need to be doing to attract people in September? And so on. And by having that type of strategy, you don't end up in the Sahara Desert of selling where everything dries up and you're lost without a camel or any water. And also what happens is that when you're selling and planting the seeds ahead of time, whether it's for a product launch or whatever you're going to be doing, you're beating your competition. Because most people out there are waiting until the last minute as well. So if you want to take yourself out of that world, you have to start planning at least 90 days ahead. And I don't care whether you're online or offline, because my business is built totally on the internet and doing things in person as well. And that's the way I work it, and I would recommend everybody do the same thing. So how is that? That's bossy, but that's what I'm
saying. That is bossy, but that is really good at the same time, because sometimes it takes somebody being a little bit bossy in order to really get people spurred to action.
Absolutely. Well, and also for them to realize, like, quit your whining. I think all of us are, I was just at my seminar a little while ago, I said, look, I know that a lot of people, even while I've been talking on this call today, there's been a lot of people out there who are going, they have the whammobile happening right in their mind right now. They'll go, I don't have time for that, or I don't have the money for that, or I can't do, wow, wow, wow. Again, I have one question for you. Are you in business? Are you serious about being in business, or are you just in an expensive hobby? Because the expensive hobby, sooner or later, you're going to choke, and you're going to get out of it. So you have to decide. If you're in business, you're going to step up to the plate, and you're going to go, okay, I am going to do this. I am going to put these, I'm going to baby step my way there. Remember, it doesn't have to be pretty. You just baby step your way there and make sure that you also don't do all this yourself. You have to have.
Oh, yeah.
You got to get some help for that little grunt work, all that work where you're staying so, and again, so many women in business, they're very busy, yeah, but they're not busy at being a sales and marketer. And by the way, everybody, truly, you are not what you sell. You may think, oh, I sell wedding dresses on the internet, or oh, I sell this, or I sell that, or I have a dog restaurant or whatever. Well, guess what? That's not what you sell. What you sell first is sales and marketing. What you are doing first is you're a sales and marketer, and what you sell is completely secondary. But too many people get hung up on just what they do, and then they think, oh, okay, well, that's not going to work for me, or I don't have time for that. Well, those are just excuses. And so, yeah, I really want everybody to move away from that. Step into a place of being proactive, and you'll discover that you'll make way more money than you possibly have dreamed, and also it really positions you in such a powerful way for when the recession ends. You're going to come out of this. This recession is not going to last for everybody, and when you come out of it, when we come out of it, a lot of your competition is going to have filtered out because they couldn't take the heat, and you'll have positioned yourself as an expert. You're going to be in front of the media. You're going to be doing all sorts of cool things, and your business is going to even rock bigger and better than what it was before. So really see this as what it is. This is an opportunity if you choose to look at it this way.
Yeah, it really is.
I totally love that about life. And
I'm assuming that you do some coaching or something along those lines to help people who really are trying to, you know, make some headway.
Oh, yeah. I actually have many, many different opportunities for people. And first of all, I recommend they go to my website, which is salesdivas.com. There's a ton of free resources there. And, of course, I'm going to bribe you because on my site I've got podcasts and there's articles and stuff. But I have a weekly e-newsletter that I send out every week full of sales tips. And when you sign up for that, you'll also get my 30-page free report, and it is the 5 biggest sales mistakes women make. So that dives into some of the stuff we've talked today in greater detail, and also actually some other stuff as well. So I do everything from teleclasses. I have a membership program called the Prosperity Cafe, seminars. I'm an author. I have a book called Tickle Pink, The Secrets of Attracting Delightful Customers. There's many different things for you. And again, my focus, my whole goal is helping women entrepreneurs and women who sell really have successful businesses. I move my clients into that six-figure category plus, and they don't have to, and of course, they don't have to cold call to get there. So it's very fun. I feel like I'm living, I truly am feel like I'm living the dream. I don't have to, it's not working. Helping women succeed and getting to see how they really can turn it around is such a rewarding thing. I love it.
It really is. And how long have you been doing this?
Well, I actually started I left the world of media sales almost eight years ago. And it's funny, because guess what, everybody? A lot of people will say, oh, you're a born sales diva, or you're born into a big, fat business. No, I had to start just like the rest of you. I left corporate Canada and went on my own and created a company and had to do all the things that I'm talking to you about. And now I work all over the world. I've worked for the government of Barbados. I do seminars in New York and all across the United States and Canada. And, oh, keep your fingers crossed for me, people, because I just got back from France and I was in Paris. And somebody that I met there, they're trying to get me to come to Paris.
Nice.
I know. Wouldn't that be fun? So, because, of course, they're wanting to learn how to do business with North Americans, and I'm the lady for the job. It's all good.
So wow.
It is good. And how about you with this program and all the cool things that you're doing with your listeners? What motivated you to do this?
Well, I have a really interesting history. I'm an attorney by trade.
Yeah.
Back in the 90s, I was an attorney. And in 97, I was in a really devastating car accident that left me in a hospital bed and wheelchair for about the next 10 years.
Wow.
Well, during that time, I had about $9.9 million worth of medical bills.
Whoa.
And I turned to the Internet just as a way to survive, quite literally. More than $40,000 just in medication every single month, just to stay alive. So I turned to the Internet to make that happen and started in as a day trader and had a day trading chat room. But as my health continued to decline, I started looking for ways to do things more passively, because that really required my active participation in being there 14 hours a day, and I couldn't do it. So by late 90s, I had started into this other direction and started trying to help other marketers who were trying to build businesses with their traffic and building lists and whatnot. And eventually became a JV broker, became known as the JV Queen because of the big product launches that I was doing. Mm-hmm. And by 2005, my health got so bad that the doctors gave me 12 to 18 months to live.
Oh, my gosh.
So when that happened, I said, you know, I really want to see the country before it's time to die. Let's hit the road in a motorhome for what I thought would be about an 8 to 10-month trip until it was time to go home to die. And 6 months later, we were in Sedona, Arizona, when my health was really declining fast. I didn't think I'd have that full 8 to 10 months that I had planned on originally. It was my birthday, and my husband wanted me to have the best last birthday that I could. So he took me to a massage therapist just to help with the pain control. And I got up on her table, and she took one look, and she said, you know, you're not going to die as soon as you think. And I'm like, yeah, What's this lady trying to sell me? But she wasn't trying to sell me anything. So she went on to tell me that all I needed to do was to remove the negativity from my life and I wouldn't die as soon as I thought. So I tried to make sense of that and I researched it to death. And as I did, I really figured out what she was trying to say. It wasn't enough to just have a positive mental attitude. I really needed to work on all the other negativity that was in my life. From little things like I used to watch CNN 24/7, having been a day trader. Not exactly very positive, right?
No, exactly.
To big things like people in my life who were really negative. I can't change them, but I can certainly change me and how I come into contact with that negativity. So over the next 4.5 months, as I really learned what this woman's message was and how to apply it in my life, I managed to stop 42 pills per day, 4 continuous IVs per day. I lost 68 pounds without ever going on a diet. My hair had been completely gone on the top of my head, got a full head of hair again. I went from a wheelchair to a walker to a cane to walking with no assistance at all, even though to this day I have no feeling in my legs and feet. You'd never guess it if you saw me walking.
Wow.
So by the end of that 4.5 months, not only was I no longer dying, I was completely well. And because of that, I call it my miraculous transformation, it really made me want to give back even more because I felt like I had been given this gift. And so out of that transformation came my mission, which today is to help 1 million people learn to live the life of their dreams, and the vehicle that they do use to do that is a business that uses the power of the Internet.
You bet.
Not one that's online or off, but mm-hmm. one that harnesses the power of the Internet to help them live the life of their dreams. And so that's what led me into the IM University, which July 1st becomes Directions University. I'm so excited about it because the IM University name has never really fit what we teach and what we do. What we really do is we help people give direction in their life, direction in their business, give direction to their customers, and change the direction of the world. So it's much more than just the Internet Marketing University.
Yeah, that's what I love about that. Isn't that amazing? I think for all of your listeners as well, that here's a woman, you had tremendous obstacles, and look what you have, look what you've created. It's possible for everybody. It is. I think that's the thing. It's so important, and you nailed it when you were talking about the CNN and all that other stuff. I'm a chick that worked in television for 15 years, and now I hardly watch it. I'm really selective on what I read and what I listen to and what I watch, just because it does. It has such a negative effect, and in business, you really do have to be very careful of what you want to allow in your life, and that includes customers, by the way, because when you were just talking about how you eliminated a lot of the negativity, for some of you who are listening to this call, there might be some people in your life that, as customers, who actually are draining for you, and I'm all about that you really do have to respectfully release those people and leave room for all the amazing customers that are out there all over the world that want to buy from you. But if you're spending too much time taking care of the people who are complaining all the time, or who are wanting everything really cheap, or really trying to make demands on you, that's not the way to run a business either. So I would really encourage people on a customer and a business level just to realize, surround yourself with the best and the brightest on every possible direction. It's wonderful.
Absolutely.
So, I love that about the opportunities with sales and marketing and exactly
you do that by having things like your info products and whatnot. They're available to everybody. If somebody's negative and they still want to buy from you, okay, let them.
Well, when I'm talking about those types of people, will tend to they're the person that will buy that product, copy the whole thing, and then mail it back to you and want a full refund.
Yeah, that's true too.
And so
that is true too.
Yeah,
but
it's all about filtering stuff like that out.
The people that you allow to come into contact with you, the people in your coaching programs, mm-hmm. the people that you're working one on one with. In my high-end program, my mentoring program, it is by invitation only.
Yes.
I don't care if you've got the money to plunk down on it. If you are negative, you are not coming into that program. It will affect the group energy, and every single person in the group will feel it.
Absolutely.
And I'm not going to do that to the people that I'm working with or to myself.
Precisely. And isn't that the great thing about being a business owner? That we can have the direction of that you're 100% responsible for the direction of what you're doing, both the good and the bad. You know, we've been talking about some of the stumbling blocks, but the flip side of that is that you're in total control of who you want in your world, who you want to have as customers, like you said, buying you from you one-to-one, and just being really clear. When you're really clear about who you want to attract to you, I find that the goofballs just sort of fall away.
Well, it's funny because somebody asked me the other day, isn't that being selfish, and is it okay to be selfish? Well, it might seem selfish, but I don't even perceive it as being selfish at all. Do you?
No. I call it focused instead.
Yes, that's a good word for it.
I believe it's called being focused. And so for me, everything with my business and how I conduct myself, I want to make sure that I'm focused on the people that I can help the most. And I call it the joy factor. It's also those customers that I really feel I can, that I get as much energy from them and back and forth between the two of us. I get great satisfaction and joy seeing people achieve their goals and achieve their dreams. It's such a wonderful feeling. I've had women send me emails and say that, you know, they're a single mom and they really were on their way to becoming bankrupt, and now they turn their business around, major cash flow, they're doing all sorts of cool things, taking their kids to Disneyland, buying new cars. That's why with all of us, when you're selling what you love, when you're doing what really is on path for you, that you're absolutely in alignment with what your goals, people know that. They feel it on some level. They can even feel it coming through your website, whether you're just if you're just a cheese ball and just after them for the money, or whether you are someone who truly is a relationship salesperson and a relationship marketer, they can absolutely tell that.
Yes.
I totally think that.
I definitely agree.
Go ahead.
Are there any other mistakes that we should be talking about that we haven't talked about?
Oh, my God, we would probably need about 10 hours to talk about that. I think we've covered some of the major core ones. And, oh, here's one we can wrap up with today, is that I want people, women have really been taught to think that bragging is a bad thing.
Oh, yes.
And I'd like to just briefly talk about this, because I believe that one of the biggest mistakes that women make is that they're really terrible at self-promotion. They're really poor at self-promotion. And a lot of us, how we're raised to be nice girls, and we're taught that, you know, bragging when you're talking about yourself or your accomplishments, that's a bad thing. Well, I want to just change your perspective on that, everybody, because even when you're reading my bio, Gina, you're talking about Occasion National Award winner and youngest person in the history of one of the oldest networks to be a sales manager, blah, blah, blah. Those are facts. It's the truth. It's not bragging about some falsehood. It's the truth. And so there's a time and place for that, everyone. I want you to understand, as part of building your credibility, you need to have why someone should trust you. And so if you have that, whether it's from previous jobs that you've held, testimonials from your customers, I want you to understand that you really have to leave that. And the boys have been getting this for a long time. They totally understand that you have to talk about yourself or brag about yourself or whatever it may be. It's just that it has to be relevant to your customer. That's really the main filter that you have to do there. You can't just be rattling off a bunch of information. It has to be relevant to your customer. But you must in business, you must be a fabulous self-promoter. Or you got to hire someone to do it for you.
It's what I would call getting the voice of the expert down pat, because that's what you're being when you're a self-promoter.
Big time.
Unless you perceive yourself as the expert, nobody else will perceive you in that way either.
That's exactly right. And what I love about when we think about the word expert, actually for many women, hearing the word expert makes them feel incredibly uncomfortable. They can't call myself an expert because I don't have a PhD, or haven't been doing this long enough, or, oh, I don't make enough money yet, or whatever it may be. And I just think, no. If you look up in Webster's Dictionary, expert is someone who has knowledge in a certain area, has expertise in a certain area. And so that doesn't talk about PhD or 10 years of whatever you're doing, or it doesn't say any of those things. But remember that when your customer hears the word expert, they hear, and subconsciously they're hearing credibility, they're hearing that it's an investment versus an expense, that they're hiring or paying for someone who really knows what they're talking about, who really can help be a problem solver. And so that's what a customer thinks about when they hear the word expert. And also, when we all know this, experts aren't typically on sale.
Mm.
So we are also people who get top dollar, whether it's a recession or not, for what we bring to the table, because people are more loyal to us and they have higher expectations of us. And so, everybody, I really want you to position yourself as an expert versus being a commodity where now people and potential customers are always grinding you on being dropping your prices, having the lowest price. Unless you're Walmart, and I don't think any of you are, that's definitely not the technique that you want to take. You want to position yourself as an expert versus being a commodity. Because remember, commodities, it's always about price.
Absolutely. Have you ever read the book, The Blue Ocean Strategy?
No, I haven't.
You know, so much of what you've said today reminds me of things from that book. It's a book that's about red ocean markets and blue ocean markets. And red ocean markets are markets that are much like the internet marketing niche today.
Mm-hmm.
That's so competitive that all of the suppliers are becoming sharks. There's like a feeding frenzy going on in the market that's causing the ocean or the market to become red and bloody. It's a market that has people competing on price, and the more that happens, the prices drop, and as the prices drop, the quality drops. And before you know it, according to the book, as in any market cycle, as long as that's happening, even the demand is going to diminish.
Absolutely.
And they compare that red ocean market to a blue ocean market. A blue ocean market is one that doesn't even exist today. It's created from bringing a value-added innovation into a red ocean. So the example that they give throughout the book repeatedly is Cirque du Soleil. They could have gone into the red ocean market of circuses or the red ocean market of theaters. But instead, they brought the value-added innovation of a theatrical performance into the product of a circus, creating this brand new blue ocean market out of circus-going theater lovers.
Love it.
They totally own it.
They do, and they're Canadian.
They are.
based out of Montreal.
And that book, it was written by a Canadian, as a matter of fact. It talks about so many of the concepts that you've talked about and shared with us today. I think you'd really enjoy the book because it sets out a specific formula that people can use to create blue ocean markets for themselves.
Very cool. I'm absolutely going to pick that up. I love it. And I love anything analogy with Cirque du Soleil because they're, as you've identified, they're incredibly unique and innovative. And one of my favorite words is astonishing. I love things. I love anything that astonishes me.
Absolutely. And it even talks about how when Ford came out with the Model T, that the Model T was actually a blue ocean strategy because he did things in a way that really was different. He brought this value-added innovation of having a car that was duplicatable and scalable and very basic to the idea of automobiles, which at the time, the people who were out there creating them before the Model T were doing these cars that were big and gorgeous and luxury cars for a market that had very little money, that had very poor roads because they didn't have cars before that, that it didn't really make sense. And so the market was drying up really big time because of it. So here Ford comes with his Model T, and it's because of that that automobiles are what they are today. And they give example after example after example of products that you can readily understand because you use them all the time that were created out of this concept of a blue ocean.
I love it. Well, that really describes Google, doesn't it?
It does,
or,
doesn't
or
it?
Or anybody that has, or eBay, Facebook, all these things that are initially on paper sounded completely bizarre. But, of course, as we all know, the impossible thing is only impossible until it becomes possible.
And so often people will say to me, well, I don't want to do that because, you know, I see competition there. Well, you want some competition. You really want to know that somebody is already successful serving this audience so that you know you can make money in it. But you don't want so much competition that it's a red ocean.
Absolutely. I totally love that. Well, thank you for that book recommendation. I'll be doing that.
Good. Well, Kim, it has been my pleasure to have you here today, and I want everyone to go right now to www.salesdivas.com and get signed up on Kim's list so that you can really start using everything that she shared with us today in your business on a regular basis. It is what relationship marketing is all about, for sure. And let's see, what else did I want to tell you guys about? We will be back again next Tuesday at noon Eastern here on Blog Talk Radio for another great episode of Relationship Marketing 101. I am looking for a new co-host to the radio show. If you're interested in applying, send an email to adminteam@theimuniversity.com. That's it for today. Thank you so much for being with us, Kim. It was my pleasure having you as a guest.
Thank you.
And see you all again next Tuesday at noon Eastern here on Blog Talk Radio. Have a great week, everybody.